The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Do you remember that jacket Melania Trump had written on the back of it, "I really don't care, do you?" Did that sum up her attitude to her job as America's First Lady? Or is she going to be like Rapunzel now, escaping from captivity in the White House now that her husband has been tossed out next week? Or remember, this is a White House that she was so reluctant to go to in the first place, staying on in New York for months before she moved with son Barron to follow her husband. Marion McKeown, who of course is our weekly contributor on US affairs and who writes for the Business Post, is with us. Of course, there was an interesting story, wasn't there, behind that delay in moving to the White House, Marion?
That's right, Matt. And, you know, just for your reference to the jacket, that the infamous jacket that said, "I really don't care, are you?" It probably does sum up her attitude to her job. But I think it also sums up our attitude to Melania. There's just not a whole lot going on there to care about. But I think the story that you're referring to, Matt, absolutely, it was revealed by a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist called Mary Jordan, who works for the Washington Post. Now, in the space of about a year and a half between 2018 and the end of 2020, I beg your pardon, two books came out about Melania Trump, and Jordan wrote the second one, and in it she discloses that the reason Melania Trump didn't move to the White House in January was not, as she had claimed, was that she didn't want to disrupt her son Barron's schooling. At that stage she was 10 or 11 years old, and she said she wanted to be able to finish out the term in New York in his school, which seems entirely reasonable, if a little expensive for the American taxpayers. However, it turned out that this wasn't actually the case, that the reason Melania didn't move was altogether more savvy, given who she was dealing with, her husband Donald Trump. She didn't move because she wanted to renegotiate her prenuptial agreement, and she knew there would never be a better time to do it, because think of the optics that were going down there. Donald Trump is sitting in the White House on his own. The speculation about his marriage, that it was just a business transaction, that she was essentially a mail order bride, had been already rampant. She's sitting in New York. She's racking up security costs and Secret Service bills running to already tens of millions of dollars. And it looks like she's not going to come to the White House. So she had what Donald Trump called, would define as leverage. She had something he desperately wanted and that he was prepared to pay for. So she basically played about his own game, and apparently she won. So she upped her prenup apparently considerably. But more than that, she got written into it that Barron Trump would have the same share of the Trump empire as the three Trump children from the first marriage. She had seen firsthand how Tiffany Trump was basically airbrushed out of the Trump organization, and how, more importantly perhaps, Marla Maples, Trump's second wife, who he was still married to when he met Melania Trump, she was basically kicked out with $1 million. That was her deal for being married to Donald Trump. That was all she got. So Melania, and you know, you got to respect her for it. She knows Donald Trump famously stiffs everyone, including his ex-wives. And so she was basically, you know, making sure that her future and her son's future were going to be financially comfortable.
Well, that makes one assumption that he has money to pay for whatever settlement might be coming if they were ever to break up, because with the likes of Deutsche Bank now refusing to bank him into the future, I wonder, is he heading for his fourth bankruptcy? But that's a different thing. The other thing that was really interesting, Marion, about the way a lot of people tried to project onto Melania in the earlier days, that she was somehow captive and that she needed to be rescued and freed from Donald Trump. I mean, is the narrative really more accurate that she is a willing co-conspirator?
Absolutely. You know, I remember the day of the inauguration when it was actually quite comical. Even as Donald Trump was holding his hand up to swear on the Bible that Melania Trump was holding, she was jostling. I was standing very close to it. You could see her jostling to make sure that Ivanka Trump wasn't in the picture, because those two women loathe each other. And it was a constant battle for, you know, media coverage and a turf war that went on there in the White House. But yeah, she, I mean, she and Donald Trump, who knows what goes on in that marriage? But I think that you're right. I think she was a willing accomplice. As I say, the day after the inauguration, there was the march of possibly up to 1 million women. You may remember they were all wearing those pink pussy hats. And a lot of them had posters saying Free Melania. And even at the time, it seemed in Congress to me that Melania was perfectly free and was, I always suspected, perfectly happy with her lot. You know, she came to New York originally, just going back a couple of years. She's now in her early 50s, I believe. She came to New York at 26, which is relatively old to come to New York seeking to make a career as a model. She wanted to be a fashion supermodel. She'd had a pretty undistinguished career as a catalogue model, a lingerie model, if you will, and a couple of soft porn shots and things like that. And it had become quite clear by the time she was in her late 20s, she was never going to make the big time. You know, she really wasn't. So she found Donald Trump, you know, a flamboyant billionaire who would basically give her a very comfortable lifestyle. He was fixated with always having an exotic woman on his arm. And I think that was the transaction initially that suited them both.
OK, you mentioned that she seems happy with things. There's also a degree of self-pitying. Let's hear a little bit of a 2018 interview she did with ABC News in which she complained of being bullied.
What is your take about the Me Too movement, though? Do you believe in them? Do you support the Me Too movement?
I support the women, and they need to be heard. We need to support them. And, you know, also men, not just women.
Do you think men in the news that have been accused of sexual assault, sexual harassment, have been treated unfairly?
You need to have a really hard evidence that, you know, that if you're accused of something, show the evidence.
Some women might hear that and say, how could you say that, Mrs. Trump? You need to stand with women. What would you say?
I do stand with women, but we need to show the evidence. You cannot just say to somebody, I was, you know, sexually assaulted, and or you did that to me, or because sometimes the media goes too far and the way they portray some stories, it's not correct. It's not right.
What happened to you personally, or what did you see personally that you thought you wanted to tackle this issue?
I could say I'm the most bullied person on the world.
You think you're the most bullied person in the world?
One of them, if you really see what people are saying about me.
Also, of course, maybe she had to say that given all the allegations that have been made about her husband and his ill treatment of women. But let's hear something else. This isn't an interview. This is a tape recording secretly made by a woman called Stephanie Winston Wolkoff. And this was a discussion about Christmas decorations.
They say I'm complicit. I'm the same like him. I support him. I don't say enough. I don't do enough.
No.
Where I am, I'm working like a ass, my ass.
I know.
Christmas stuff that, you know, who gives a f*** about Christmas stuff and decoration, but I need to do it, right?
Yeah, but
correct?
100%. You have
and
no
then,
choice.
And okay, and then I do it, and I say that I'm working on Christmas, planning for the Christmas, and they said, oh, what about the children that they were separated? Give me a break. Where they were saying anything when Obama did that?
I know.
I cannot go. I was trying to get the kid reunited with the mom. I didn't have a chance. It needs to go through the process and through the law.
But here's my thing. Did you hear what you just said? But instead of that, if you just, your messaging, you were so loved.
They would not do the story. We put it out. They would not do the story.
I'm telling
you. You would not believe it. They would not do the story because they would not do the story because they are against us because they are liberal media. Yeah, if I go to Fox, they will do the story. I don't want to go to Fox.
Ah, the victim again there. Marion McCune, last word to Melania Trump.
Well, a staggering, give, you know, as I said, the multiple ironies matter. You couldn't go through them. And particularly, she goes on to say in that interview that these border children who cross the borders with their parents, these refugees, were coached, that they were saying things to them. They were, as she said, teached to say things that weren't true. You know, as I say, I think a cynical, tough and essentially hollow woman who left really no mark on the White House. And her final act, you know, if you will, was to unveil a tennis court pavilion at a time when thousands of people were dying a day from coronavirus and when the country was in the economic toilet. It really just showed the sense of entitlement and the tin ear that not just Melania, but I would venture the entire Trump clan has and suffers yes. from.
Okay, Marion McKeown, thank you for joining us. You'll be with us
thank
on
you.
Tuesday with Cal Thomas and again on Wednesday during the Biden inauguration. So a lot of things from America to look forward to next week.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.